reaching out, touching me, touching you, sweet Caroline. You're supposed to go ba ba ba. Oh, man. See you next time.
This is the Citadel Cafe. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 6, recorded Wednesday, February 1st, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing this fine evening?
Ni hao. I'm doing good.
Nice. And the snicker coming from my other right is Mr. Chad Merlin. The only thing that you need to know about Chad is that you don't need to know anything about Chad. Chad, what is going on, sir?
Aside from not freezing my butt off being inside my nice warm house, not a whole lot, you know, just one of those good weeks.
Cold outside?
Yeah, freezing, yeah.
Good to know. Good to know. It's like just above zero, I think, here in Halifax. This hasn't been too bad. If you guys happen to be new to the show, the Citadel Cafe is where me and my friends come to hang out and talk about the sci-fi, fantasy, geeky stuff that we've been into lately. We gravitate towards those topics, but we're not myopic. Could be a book, could be something on the internet, could be just about anything that we find interesting. And then we relay our thoughts to you, the fine listener. So what's been going on, guys? How's the week been so far?
Pretty good from my end.
Yeah.
Yep. Went a little vacation on the weekend to a very lovely spot on the St. Lawrence River stayed in a hotel/manor, I guess. And it was really impressive. It was very nice. And it's a nice little quick getaway with my wife and I. And, you know, so it was fun. And came back and back to the grind.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm actually on the reverse. I just finished the grind. I sent off all my projects that I was working on last week to the client last night. Turns out there was actually an email error. I was really, really embarrassed. Apparently, sending from Gmail on the web when I'm on Snow Leopard does not always work. So I was wondering why I wasn't. Yeah. Well, I wasn't always. Receiving feedback, and I was. I mean, I wasn't being too harsh because the girl that I normally deal with was actually homesick. So I thought, well, I mean, she's ill. It's not like she's on top of her email. Well, turns out my Gmail was not sending. So all the stuff that I was waiting for feedback was sitting in my outbox having gone nowhere. So I was really frustrated. So I felt bad. So I worked extra hard on Monday, Tuesday to get that stuff all done as soon as freaking possible. Because, I mean, it wasn't necessarily my fault, but it was my responsibility to then catch up on everything. So I had all that stuff all finished. And then today, I will be happy to report that this is probably the first time I have been on a computer all day. I read a little bit of email this morning just to kind of be one with the world. And the rest of it was just podcasts and housework. You know, I was cleaning house here in the studio, doing some laundry and stuff like that. So I had a very non-digital day, which was pretty cool. I mean, if you don't count the podcast, but I mean, visually, I was not looking at a whole lot of screen stuff, which was very cool.
It's good to reset once in a while.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and Peyton, yeah, you've had an eventful day.
Yeah. My son turned 2. So
holy crap.
We are now officially into the terrible of the twos.
Oh, but had that started?
But really,
before?
It's not too terrible. It's just that he's going into size 4 clothes. So essentially, he's the size of a 3.5 to 4-year-old, but he's just turning 2.
Yeah.
And as I was saying to my wife the other day, like, my father moved furniture for a living, and he's probably one of the strongest men I know. And I know personally, I'm quite strong as well. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like lifting something, you just, you know, muck onto it and you try to pick it up. And if it doesn't go the first time, you just say, okay, I need 20% more power. You just put that out to your legs and up it comes, right? So he sort of does the same thing because, like, he'll drop his soother behind his crib. So I'll have him one arm and I'll just pick the crib up with the arm and throw it on your knee and you'll bend over, pick up the soother and put the crib back down. So he sort of sees this as the normal everyday operating thing, sort of like, you know, Bob Parr from the Incredibles sort of thing. I just pick something up and grab underneath it and put it down, right? As opposed to like getting on the floor and scooching underneath it. So it's interesting to watch him be in the world because, again, he is stronger than most of the kids his age. But, you know, he had a good day today. He was back in daycare. His ear infections is going away and all that fun stuff. And we're having a proper birthday party for him on Sunday there. And so, we were looking at maybe changing his daycare situation to maybe a smaller home environment, but we're opting to keep him where he is, I think, because it seems to work out better with a little more structure and more kids, because the more kids that are there, the greater chance he has to learn to be gentle. So, anyway, because he...
Yeah, it's a good social experience.
Yeah, because, you know, I play kind of rough with him sometimes, and I need to actually teach him to be a little softer, because last week he grabbed the kid to give the kid a hug, and the teacher turned around, and the kid was turning blue. So we had to come over and teach him the hug softly. And so then, he ended up getting a group hug from, like, 18 of his classmates, and he was quite had went and soft hugs all day then. So,
anyway,
he's a good kid. He's awesome.
Nice. Anyway. Very, very cool. Well, that's great. I can't believe he's two, man. That's nuts. I remember when we took him to Free Comic Book Day, and he was like 3 months old.
Yes, in the Batman costume. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and you had the Iron Man thing on your chest. Yeah. I seen that picture. Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. Well, before we get into all the cool stuff that we're watching, which is our first segment today, I did want to mention one little thing. Chad, I know you're into it. I myself have been playing. Peyton, I have no idea whether you've picked this up yet, but...
Yeah, I don't have a chance.
You haven't started playing Hero Academy? I mean, I feel like we'd be remiss as a podcast if we didn't mention Hero Academy.
Oh, my God.
You folks go ahead. I'll just listen in.
Just listen in. For all of you who don't know, it's a free iPhone game. You can pay for the extra race or color upgrades and stuff to your playable team. You can play for free if you want to deal with an ad after every move, which is fine. I've been playing for a week, I guess, and I am so far undefeated.
Oh, son of a mother.
But I don't play that much.
Are you only playing Chad, or are you playing someone else as well?
No, that's the problem. I've got about 10 or 15 games on the go from different people. And the thing is, like, when you make a move, then somebody always is like, oh, he's made a move. I should make a move right back. So then you're going through your list of 15 people. Well, by the time you've reached the bottom of your 15 people, the first person that you've made a move with has made their move. So then you go and make your move again. And then all of a sudden it's a half an hour later and you're like, I have things to do. I kind of have to go now, to the point where I've actually turned the noise off on the notification. I still get a little banner at the top of my phone when the game goes off. But I do not get a sound because the game was going off constantly.
I don't have the noise. I never put the noise on. I don't put any forwarding. Yeah. Any of those noises, interruption things, but I do look forward to seeing that you have a new game to play. Oh, excellent. And there, if you look at the chat room right now, it is epic of epicness. Like, yes. we went best of seven, and now we're in, like, it's too much. It's too much. We're definitely, Giz Gamer and I are definitely at a very similar level of... skill on this game, and it's fun. It's very fun.
What was that name again?
GIS Gamer.
Oh, okay, that's not what you said the first time.
No, I know it wasn't. I just realized the wrath is about to be had on the chat room.
You can kiss your crystals goodbye, my friend. Yeah. Well, I've been playing GIS Gamer, and R. Murphy, I don't think that we are currently engaged on that. We should remedy that. I don't know. I haven't. I don't know if I even have him on Game Center. But anybody that wants to play with me on Hero Academy, it's Duggan is my screen name. So you can add me that way. I believe I'm Starcrossed in the Game Center thing on the phone. But that's where you can find me.
If you want, especially if you want to take him down a notch, because apparently he's undefeated.
Well, now I said, I say that, but I probably have only completed, I want to say, 10 games. Like, I really have not played that much. I'm playing several, but I haven't actually finished a whole lot. So the odds of me going down very soon, looking at you, GIS Gamer, are probably imminent. are probably imminent. But Peyton, you should check it out, because it's free. You don't have to buy anything to play the game. And buying stuff doesn't necessarily give you an advantage. It's nothing like that. It's more aesthetics, except for the extra race. But the extra race seems to have, like, the same but different abilities as the race that you already have.
It's like StarCraft.
Yeah, it's like StarCraft, exactly. Yeah. And actually, the Dwarf race was rumored to come out today.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, so anybody interested in that.
What are your thoughts on that, Joel? Would you, I might spend $2 in the future, like, not now, it's just what we're all playing together, but maybe if it really gets, we really pick it up, I wouldn't mind shelling out $2 to try like the dwarf or something later on.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I feel like I've played it enough that for a free game, I'm getting enough enjoyment out of it. I really like the art. And that's why I think, Peyton, you would like to check it out anyway, is just because of the animation and the art and the design of the game. It's really quite cool. And you can play it like I'm playing it. You don't have to sit down and engage and play the whole thing. You can pick it up, make a move, and then go back to work. You know, like you can take a 5-minute break. I mean, you have to have the willpower to do it, but it's not like it's something that you need to sit down and do only the one thing. It's kind of like chatting with somebody, you know, like you can reply when you have time and that kind of stuff. So, but I did definitely check it out for the art.
I'm actually downloading it here now.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You'll have to figure out what your game handle is going to be and let us know. So we can all take part. Right on. Well, I guess that brings us to the first segment of the show, which is what we are watching on movies, television, video, that kind of thing. And so far, we are now on episode 2 of our Winter is Coming countdown, The King's Road. If you're new, this is probably the last time I'm going to go through the whole spiel, but we're basically just watching the first season of Game of Thrones, leading up to the premiere of season 2. On April 1st. If that doesn't work out evenly in the number of weeks, we will let you know which week we're going to watch 2 in a row. But right now, episode 2 is what we're talking about. Be warned, spoilers, if you have been living under a rock and haven't seen the Game of Thrones, we are going to be talking about it in full. I think that's about it. So yeah, what did you guys think about episode 2? When did you watch it? Peyton, you said last week that Lee was really excited to get into the next episode. Was she stoked?
Yeah, she was totally stoked. We put it on Monday night and we watched it, and she's like, "Oh, it's early. If we watch this another one now." I'm like, no, I don't have it on the computer. We can't watch it right now." So she wants another. So I actually had episode 3 is up there now. So I think she's gonna be watching it in a couple minutes. But she is totally hooked. So you know. She's like, "Oh, that person's going to be real badass, aren't they?" I'm like, "I don't know, maybe." "Do they live through the end?" I'm like, "I don't know, maybe." So it's kind of funny because she's like nailing a lot of the little things and foreshadowing that they put into the episode. She's nailed what's going to happen in the future. It's kind of funny. Cool. And we're really quite enjoying it because they are definitely setting up, like, you know, who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. And then, of course, that all gets blurred, I think, down the road. But, you know, who you want to root for sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's... A couple points, though, we had to pause it and go rewind it, and so we can hear again what they said. Because sometimes it's like, you know, it could be quite low and, mm-hmm. you know, like... Again, with Martin, you really need to pay really close attention because they'll say something once. It doesn't seem to have any real significance. And then... You know, it's the entire series hinges on something, right?
So. Yeah. Well, and this particular episode I found focused on Jon Snow quite a bit in terms of his story, where he's going, where he came from, that kind of stuff. And he's one of my favorite characters in the book. I think he's probably a fan favorite, I really enjoy the way that they kind of allude to the mystery of his mother. You get her name later on. I think Ed Stark says it's Wyla. He's talking to the king over like a picnic or something.
Yeah,
on the king's road on the way back to.
Yeah, and it's something really heartbreaking. But when he says, you know, "We'll talk about your mother when I get back."
Yeah, exactly. It's it leads to this kind of mystery of like, who was she? This is my second or third time going through the series now. It's And of course, having read farther ahead in the books, it makes me kind of wonder what kind of importance she might have if John ever does figure out who she is, you know, whether Ned's the only one that knows, you know, that kind of thing. So it's...
Yeah, and you wouldn't even tell the king about it, right?
No.
Yeah,
and the thing is, too, you can tell that she wasn't just anybody. Like, mm-hmm. when Stark talks about her, he gets a little, not weepy, but he just gets nostalgic. It looks like he's looking into the past. You know, when he mentions her name, it's more the same with the rest of the show. I mean, there's a lot of
I'll say this right now with the books because I'm going to go back to the books a lot because those are a lot fresher, and I found, and I'm telling you, even on this topic, the book is way better on the books, and especially. But the great thing about George Martin is that he uses characters you would think would never ever intertwine, and he meshes them in such great ways. And and speaking of Jon Snow's mom, there comes up again later on in the books and with another character, and it's really cool how it just throws you. You know how you were saying about, wait a minute, did that actually happen? And then, yeah, it did. And then you got to go back and read it twice. No, that's what really happened.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So there's more to come. So not to spoil anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I we have to be careful too. Like, I mean, it's, I know it's you and Jocelyn have talked about having like this big spoiler free or spoiler full conversation off mic about the series, because you guys have read farther ahead in the books than I have. Yeah. And Peyton, you've only just watched the series. You haven't read the books at all, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying, you know, where things are going as a refresher. I think that, you start to see a little bit more of the characters in the second episode. Daenerys is seen as smarter and stronger than she first appeared.
She comes out of her shell a little bit more. Yeah.
A little bit more. And her brother is not in it as much. So it's,
Thank God.
Exactly. She's got another guy with Khal Drogo. I mean, he's not the nicest at first, but it's
for
still
Sun and Stars.
Yeah.
Moon and Stars. Moon and Stars.
Moon and Stars. Yeah.
Sun. Yeah.
Sun and Stars? I thought it was Sun and Stars.
It might be Sun and Stars. I don't remember.
I think it's Sun and Stars.
Or the stars, moons, and clovers.
Yeah.
Lucky charm.
Horses and blue moons.
Magically delicious, boy.
Nice. And the other thing that I thought was a point in season, or in not season two, in episode two, was the, you get to see a little bit more of the personality from Joffrey and how much we freaking hate this kid.
Like, you can swear. It's a lot.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying really hard not to.
That's like that scene with Tyrion in the stable there, and he smacks him, and then he smacks him, and then he smacks him again.
Yeah, well,
that's when people start to really enjoy Tyrion.
Yeah, well, you enjoy Tyrion, and you really get a good picture of what kind of a brat Joffrey is. And speaking of that scene, actually, Gregory, I don't remember his last name off the top of my head. He is, I am French boy. On Twitter, he sent he posted a link on Google Plus when he was talking about his thoughts on the first episode, and we've got that in an email later on, actually. But he sent this YouTube loop of the three slaps. So it's nice. So it's like 1 2 3 1 2 3 3 2 1 2 3 2 1 1 1. Like it just, it's great. It's really really funny. It's worth checking out.
And have you guys seen the Goonies and Game of Thrones mashup?
No.
Okay. I got to post that to show notes. Someone took the entire thing where they're interrogating Chunk, and he's going about like all the bad things he's done. And then when they're interrogating the imp and the, I want to see the little man fly, mommy, that scene.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, episode six or seven or five or six.
So all that. Anyway, they just dub him right over with the fake vomit and everything. It's really quite funny.
I'm totally going to watch that.
That's good fun for you here.
I found that speaking of Goonies, I found that for $5 on DVD here not too long ago when I bought that. Put that in the collection.
Nice.
Anyways.
Nice. So the other thing that that comes to mind too, aside from the characters, is the scenery. You start to leave Winterfell and you get into some wider vistas. And it really kind of made me, one of the reasons why I took this little tech vacation today is because I just, after watching that episode Monday night, I wanted to go hiking or camping or get out of the city and go for a drive or something like that. And you were saying that you thought that it was filmed in Ireland?
Yes, I thought I'd read that somewhere, and maybe someone in the chat room might let us know. I'd read all that stuff early on when I started following Game of Thrones on Twitter, and they'd posted a whole bunch of stuff like that early on about season two, and I think it was Ireland, but again, I can't be 100% sure on that. But it makes sense. I mean, just the way the rocks and the green and
and it has that kind of northern. Kind of British Isles look to it.
Westeros. I wonder what Westeros was based on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's, I don't know. I really thought it was very pretty. Now, I mean, of course, you don't know what they're doing in terms of plates. I mean, they might be walking over a plain in Ireland and then taking a shot of a mountain in Switzerland and kind of, you know, smashing the two together in post. But if anything in the shots were real, it was certainly appealing to me. The other thing that I thought was, a point in the episode is, like, all of a sudden these really cool dire wolves that you picked up in episode one are dwindling quickly. Lady Sansa's wolf dies, and Nymeria Arya's wolf is chased away so that she doesn't die. Arya doesn't want her to die, so she chases her off. And it's just like, well, okay, great. Now we're down to Rickon's wolf and Bran's wolf and...
John and Rob.
And it's just like, well, what was the point? You know, in the book, it felt like they were around a little bit more because there was more of a story about the wolves around the castle and hanging out with each character and stuff like that. So when the wolves died in the book, it was more poignant. I felt it had more weight. Where in the TV show, you're like, okay, well, no one likes to see an animal die, but it was, you know, and what's funny is that I think more people that I've talked to were upset about Lady being killed.
Than the butcher's son.
You know,
I view animals the same way. I get all emotional if an animal dies.
Well, also I think in general there is a bit of a prejudice towards, you know, ginger haired kids anyway. So
wow.
I'm not saying I am, but you know, there was that entire campaign while, you know, kick a ginger sort of thing. So you know.
Whoa, back up. Kick a ginger? When was this?
Yeah, my sister's a ginger. I know. I heard all about that.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was like big in England, I think it was. They were calling it Kick a Ginger, and they were like, you know, kids were getting like bullied like a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So did you guys have a favorite scene from episode two?
Go ahead, Payne.
Yeah, I think
That scene? Wow.
Yeah.
Riveting.
That was awesome. Mm. Speechless. No, when the kids were playing with the swords, with the fake swords, and then Lannister comes in and, you know, acts like a twat and then gets, you know, his arse handed to him and the dog and all that fun stuff. Anyway.
True to Lannister form.
Yeah. And, you know, and we're not really spoiling that this guy is a bit of an arse, because if you see the trailer for season two, you see him standing there pointing a crossbow at his missus, as his wife or whatever she is to become. So anyway.
Yeah. And you, Chad?
The scene with the candlelit dragon's eggs was kind of nice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pick a favorite scene out of this one because it was a great, but I haven't seen it three times. This being the third time, I'm going to say I'm going to move on and wait for another episode. This is one of those ones I felt I just had to get through to get to better stuff, okay. Honestly. Right. Yeah.
Well, for me, there was two that stuck out. The first is just the very last bit where Bran wakes up at the same time that Lady dies.
Yeah.
And now knowing what I know in the books, I can see how that's foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought that was very cool. I didn't pick up on that the first time through because it had been... Well, I hadn't read book two before I had watched season one, so I didn't know what I know. I do not know what I know now, what I didn't know.
But knowing then, what knowing you know then now.
Would have known, would have been power, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that I thought was, I want to say moving, I guess the thing that made me irk was the assassination attempt on Bran when the killer has the knife to Catelyn's throat, and he's cutting through her fingers. Like, she's basically, her fingers are the only thing between this knife and her throat. Yeah. And I mean, it might be the fact that I work with my hands. It might be just the feeling in general, but oh my God, it made me crawl just in my skin to watch that. And because they're so visceral with that kind of stuff, like there's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
It really kind of stuck with me.
When summer comes in too, right? That right after that was pretty gruesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That last gurgle of life coming out of the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gurgle is the right word too. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I've actually stabbed myself in the hand once, and it's not pleasant. Yeah, anyway.
Yuck. So what else have you guys been watching?
I haven't really been watching much this week, the last little bit. No, I'm pretty much watched out at the moment, so go ahead, Peyton.
that's about the same thing, other than just the odd little clips here and there, like, you know, the Game of Thrones meets Goonies, and that Miss Piggy clip that's floating around that people have probably been seeing kicking around, where she talks about Fox News.
Oh yeah,
buddy, that was so funny.
Yeah, you know, I think the new the new Muppets have done a really good job of capturing the entire viral idea of marketing.
Oh, good.
And with the spoof trailers and stuff they were doing before the movie came out and stuff like this as well. You know, it's really speaking to our generation, I guess. Anyway, it's funny stuff. So, because they're not taking it themselves as like a serious kids show or anything like that. Mm. So, anyway, it's kind of fun to go with the, little jabs at popular media and, mainstream.
Yeah, no, I find
news channels like Fox.
Yeah, I find that they're, I like that they do it live too. Like they did a Google Hangout. Granted, I think the Google Hangout had a bit of a script to it. But like that press conference, I mean, the puppeteers were underneath the Muppets, like just given this real press conference, which I thought was just kind of bizarre in one way, but I don't know. I thought it was.
Oh my God. Back in the day, like years ago, the Muppets were on Family Feud.
Were they really? Okay.
Yes, they were. And they hid underneath, all the actors were underneath. But oh my goodness, you guys. Kermit the Frog obviously is the team leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, name something round on the human body. Okay. Eyes, I don't know, toes, anything. So it comes down and it was like a break. It was like the break point or something like that. And the whole team guessed stuff. And Kermit goes, well, and you know how the puppeteer moves his hand in and makes like the squishy face on mm-hmm. Kermit? Like mm-hmm. he's nervous. He doesn't know what to say. He goes, mammary glands? I went, Kermit the Frog just said mammary glands. And then, bing, boobs. Yeah! And then Kermit arms and everything. Yay!
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh God. Was it still Jim Henson or was it Brian Henson doing the voice?
I don't know. No, they didn't get, if they did get into it, I didn't see it. So.
Well, I would have been probably around 10 when Henson died.
Oh, okay.
So when was this? Do you remember?
No, I would have been early teens, I think.
Okay. So it was probably after he died then.
Yeah.
Probably after. I think I was 10. I might've been a little bit older. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I do not remember. I've been watching Being Human, which is it's a British, I wanted to say comedy drama, like it's as it's gone on, it's become more drama than it has been comedy, but it true to form, it's very dry with any kind of stuff out of the UK. It's on Netflix and there's only 6 episodes and I am about halfway through the last episode, so I'm not going to get into any spoilers, but the basic premise of it is it's a ghost, a vampire, and a werewolf that are all living as flatmates. The idea is that they want to, they don't like what they have become, so they're trying to become more human. And the vampire is, quitting eating people, so he's on the wagon. The werewolf is, for all intents and purposes, in denial and has to deal with this like monthly cycle. I think there's a couple of jokes in terms of in there too, in terms of like, comparing it to a menstrual cycle. And the ghost, her story gets thicker as the series goes on, and she's brand new to being a ghost, whereas the werewolf George and the vampire Martin, I think, are old hands, I guess, at this. So she's kind of developing new abilities and new traits and stuff like that as the series goes on. So it's kind of neat to watch that. And I've just, it's a nice hour to sit down and, have a meal and watch that. And I got into it because I was trying to complete the first season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I think I mentioned it on the show a while ago that I had started watching. And I just can't get into it. And everybody else is telling me that the series gets better and there's certain episodes that you have to watch out for. And like halfway through season 2 is when it really starts to pick up and it kind of comes into its own. And I'll get there eventually. But right now, halfway through season 2 is like really, really far away.
So you're watching just the BBC one, not the American one?
For Being Human, yes, I am watching the BBC one because that's what I have access to on Netflix. The new one on American TV just started.
It was actually in the season 2 and they have it on Space Channel.
Oh, okay. It's in season 2 now.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the UK version starts into series 3, I think, this spring. I can't remember. But it's, I mean, it's closer to True Blood than it is anything else that I've watched. It's, you know, it's gory. There's a lot of blood. There's sex and nudity and violence and cursing and stuff like that. That's what I like about UK TV is that, you know, well, they'll drop the F-bomb when it's appropriate. You know, like they make it seem a little bit more real. And the guy that plays George, the werewolf, is a really good actor. And he is kind of a whiny beta male. Like, he's really not an alpha dog at all. Yeah. And
he's a Ted from the, he's Ted from whatchamacallit.
Oh, How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah. Is he a Ted?
He is, but he's a scaredy cat too. Like, it's really funny because he's this werewolf, but he's a complete fraidy cat in real life. And it's increased by his high squeaky voice, which he then, like, I think throws higher on purpose. When he's doing the character, oh my God. When he gets scared, he actually squeaks. It's really quite funny. You know, it's one of those situations where you'll have somebody, you know, startle him and he'll be like, ah! and that's not even high enough. Like, I can't do it. he's really, really high. So it's...
And the vampire on the British version is one of the dwarves in The Hobbit.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. The one thing that I noticed immediately after switching over from Buffy to Being Human is that the actors on Being Human are very, very good. The girl that plays the ghost is kind of hit or miss sometimes, but both the guy that plays George and the guy that plays Martin.
Sorry about that, guys.
Hello, my phone. Who is it? Is he going to tell us who it is?
Who is it?
Who is it, Peyton?
Put you on mute, sorry. I think it might be my father calling from British Columbia.
Probably wanting to talk to your son, even though he's asleep.
He's asleep, so we called already and left a message. So
I see. Okay, cool.
Anyway, on with the show.
On with the show. Oh, man. I'm all over the place tonight. I feel like I'm saying and butt and anyways, like every time I get a chance. So
almond butt? What?
Almond butt.
That's exactly what I thought.
Almond butt with what kind of paste?
No matter what, it'd be enough to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm allergic to almonds, so anyway, that's not for me.
Not for you. I'm allergic to a lot more than almonds.
Yeah.
Oh, man. see? Now I'm doing it again.
Waka, waka, waka.
Waka, waka, waka.
Almond butt is the show title. Thank you.
Yeah, probably.
Nice, nice.
Oh,
that's
boy.
I was going to throw off the AdWords for Google Analytics. What? There's no almonds or butts on this website.
Almond Mound? isn't that the chocolate bar? Almond Mounds? Almond Joy and Mounds. Yeah. That's the coconut one. Mounds is coconut.
Oh, God. What a disgusting chocolate bar Mounds is.
Yeah, yeah. Here, I bought you a chocolate bar. Thanks, Mom. You don't know me at all.
Yeah. I kind of like Mounds.
I knew you would say that.
That's because you're old.
Yeah. I know.
Boy. You have a 2-year-old, dude. You're getting old.
I know. I know.
Oh, man.
I'm not as old as you, but I'm getting there.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
I'm next, aren't I?
Yes, sir, you are.
Well, my wife and me, if we want to get like,
you're next on the chopping block. You're also next in the podcast because I want to know what you've been reading.
I've been picking up the same book just before bedtime, so I've only been getting a couple pages and then I put it down. But I stumbled across a great interview of George R. R. Martin and Bernard Cornwell. And these are, I don't know if anybody's listened to the show before, but these are some of my favorite. Well, Bernard Cornwell is my favorite author. And George R. R. Martin is slowly becoming my second, but they're buddies and they interviewed each other. And I, you know, you can go out and find interviews of these guys all the time, but the fact that they interviewed each other was really nice. And there is the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, or in this case, 6 degrees of Sean Bean, who is Eddard Stark in the Game of Thrones, which is George R. R. Martin's.
Opus, we'll say.
Yeah. and then with Bernard Cornwell, he was Sharp, who is Cornwell's greatest, one of his best series. And the two of them say nothing but good things for J.R.R. Tolkien, and he was Boromir in that. So it was really cool. Like, George R. R. Martin said it was after seeing him in Sharp is one of the reasons why he wanted him for Game of Thrones. So anyways, and you read the interview link will be in the show notes, and it's kind of neat. It's not very long, but it's fun. And for someone like myself who's a fan, it's great. And there's an interesting quote from George R. R. Martin out of that, and it's the gray characters that interest me the most, he said. So, and you can really see that in the books. The show doesn't pick up on it a whole lot, but the characters that are in between, they're not the hero, they're not the worst person, but Theon Greyjoy would be would stand out as a gray character to me in the Game of Thrones. We haven't really got to see much of him in episode 1 or 2, but in season 2 he will be a very big character. Actually, you can see him getting in the teaser. I don't know, am I stepping on anything, Joel, for later on in the show about the teaser for season 2? But hello?
Hi, did we talk about that last week?
No, it was this week, wasn't it? It was supposed to be this week, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. We didn't talk about that. I think we talked about it last week.
Oh, okay. But anyway, you can see him getting, I guess, for lack of a better word, baptized into the God of the Sea, or what the people from the Iron Islands worship. You see him get the salt water dumped on him. The salt water god, I think, but you think the seven gods is a lot now. Season 2 is going to give us at least 2 more religions, basically, or what's the black types of religion? Theologies. Can't find my words tonight. But anyway, yeah, so you see that in the you see that in the teaser trailer for season 2. You see Theon getting water poured on him, and that's something for where he's from.
There's just thinking with Sean Bean. There is, have you guys seen his death reel?
No, he dies in other stuff besides the Lord of the Rings, Peyton. I didn't know that.
Okay, well, apparently there is 21 examples of how Sean dies.
No.
Someone has compiled all of his death scenes from various roles into 1 3-minute and 53-second long clip, and it's got like almost 700,000 views. Anyway, if you wanted to see, you know, different ways that he could, you know, do the last, you know, it's kind of a fun way to go.
He doesn't die in Sharp though, so that's good. He doesn't die. He dies in Ronin. Pretty sure. Does he die in Ronin? Anybody ever see Ronin? Did he die?
I actually haven't seen Ronin.
I can't remember him in Ronin.
Yeah, he was the guy that was going on about being a seal.
Oh yeah, no, he totally gets
not
it.
A seal. SAS, the British.
I'm pretty sure he gets there. But he's also in like The Hitcher. The Hitchhiker remake of that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was scary in that.
Yeah, he's let's bring up his IMDb.
What else did he die in? Chat room, help us out. What else does he die in?
He was in Bond.
Oh, Equilibrium.
Yeah, he died horribly in Bond. Yeah. Horribly.
Yeah. He was in Equilibrium. What was the sort of a Matrix, sort of futuristic? It was a Matrix. It took a pill to get rid of your emotions. And Christian Bale was in it and some other people. And he was in that one. He was in Death Race 2.
That's kind of like selling yourself short.
Yeah, let's see.
Black Death. Did he die in Black Death? I almost downloaded that off iTunes, and then someone said, one of the things down below said, don't waste your time.
He was in Silent Hill, so I can't see him waste
my time. Yes, he was. He didn't die in that, though. He came home to the empty house.
We're running all these movies. We should have, like, super spoiler alert on this. There's 21 movies are going to ruin for you.
Oh, my God. One of the things that we can actually talk about, since we're still talking about Sean Bean, is the season 2 trailer for Game of Thrones. We didn't talk about that last week.
Yeah.
So, because I think it came out Friday or something, didn't it?
Yeah,
it's just a few days ago.
After the show. Yeah, it was after the show.
Did you delete it from the show notes? I thought I saw it in the show notes for this week.
No, I didn't delete it. If I did, I did it by accident, unless I moved it somewhere. But I'm pretty sure I didn't delete it. So I think we may have just... It's hard. There's so many different avenues where we talk. Like, I posted it on Twitter, and then I posted it on Google+. And then you know, we should talk about this on, you know, next episode. And then here I am not talking about it at all. So... I only watched it the once when it came out, but I am excited.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really good.
Yeah. Then like we talked about this too before, the how subtle the music is in that, and it really picks you up and moves you and ding ding. Oh, love it. Love it. It was really well done. It was really well done.
Yeah, they really show Tyrion or Tarion? Mm-hmm.
Tyrion.
Yeah,
Tyrion.
They really get the impression he's going to have a much larger role to play, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I like how the whole thing is narrated by Viserys? No.
No, the...
Varys.
The spider, yep.
Yeah, they're, Varys? Varys.
Yeah,
Varys. Yeah, it's like, why do authors do that? It's like Saruman and Sauron. Like Viserys and Varys? Like, really?
Yeah.
You couldn't come up with a different name?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
The eunuch. I knew that much. So yeah, he's talking about the intertwining of plots and things, which I think is very, very interesting. And Peyton, like you said, the more stuff with Joffrey and Sansa and where that's all going. And I'm really curious to see what happens. Like, Chad, you and I were mentioning earlier on Twitter that, we're interested to see whether we're going to see full-grown CG direwolves.
Oh, we better.
Going across the scene. I completely forgot. I hope we see some CG dragons, too. Hello?
Yeah.
I can't believe I forgot about the dragons. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited about The Hobbit is, you know, like, there's only been a handful of movies that I remember where dragons have been done right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in terms of animation and stuff like that. I mean, granted, the movie wasn't that good, but Dragonheart with Sean Connery, good dragon, like really cool looking animation and stuff like that. I thought they handled it all really well. Not a great film overall, but the CG and stuff was great. And Reign of Fire.
Yes, I was. Yeah. Gonna hope you were going to mention that.
That was wicked.
Well, the notion of mixing the chemicals as it comes out, that sort of thing is kind of fun, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like natural napalm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very cool. And the other one that I feel like was more recent. Oh, heck. What was it called?
You're allowed to say hell, Joel. You've got explicit on the podcast. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Well, it's because I'm on so many podcasts now that I'm always in like don't swear mode when I'm on mic. I don't remember. I'm going to stop mulling about.
Sleeping Beauty had a great dragon.
I know. Yes. That did, yeah. Maleficent, she was a good dragon. I'm pretty sure, or a bad dragon, I guess. An evil dragon?
The Never-Ending Story.
Oh, Falcor.
Falcor was a dragon.
Right. He's a good luck dragon.
Yeah.
Speaking of festering pile of turds from our childhood.
The best version of the Never-Ending Story has to be from the episode of Robot Chicken.
I didn't see it.
Oh, they have a never-ending party. And the rock fighters are throwing gang signs and the turtle is on his back saying, "I am so wasted."
It's
worth checking out if you like the never ending story, which you know.
Never ending story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I always had a crush on the girl that played the princess.
There's a funny bit about that as well.
What was her name?
Oh, well, that was the thing. She didn't have a name. Yeah. He had to give it to her.
Yeah, it was his mom's name.
It was his mom's name, yeah. He screamed it into the rain. I don't remember.
Yeah,
you, you couldn't hear it. Yeah. Which I think was, it might have been part of the point, but I didn't hear it. But one thing about that movie that I do remember is not the nothing, but the more.
Not the
Morgoth, because that's from Lord of the Rings. It was the Moth or the Morth or the Noth. I can't remember what it was. There was the black wolf thing.
Yes. That basically went up. Jesus out of me.
Yeah, that thing chased me to bed for a couple of years when I was a kid.
Yep.
You know, it's that and the dogs from Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
It was just something creepy about the way that they moved.
The key master?
Yeah, the ones in Ghostbusters were stop motion. So
yeah, they were stop motion, and they ran like Pepe Le Pew.
Gugunk, gugunk.
Can you imagine though? Even that would be a really good overdub. You know, like you have this terror dog running through the streets of New York, like I am coming to find you. Where are you, my precious? That would be great.
Nice.
Oh man. Well, for reading for myself, I'm actually into The Flinch. by Julian Smith. We talked about it last week. There was a link to getting the free book. I don't remember what it costs at full price. I am not so far into it that I can really say a whole lot, but so far it's pretty good. I will review it later when I have more to say. Yeah, and I guess that brings us square into the music section, and I really don't have anything to contribute. I'm not a big music listener. It's just more podcasts, so I feel like I'm a broken record. Chad, what about you?
Well, just my regular playlist, like I said last week, but I was wondering if you guys would like to try something a little new maybe for us. I mean, like, we all like music. It's part of being human being, really, I guess, but I got a question right off the bat. Like, what was your first CD that you ever bought? And not as a gift, but you spent your money on, like, you got a job and you went out and you dropped 15 bones, which was a lot of money, mm-hmm. on a CD for like two songs, really, ultimately. But like, what was your first CD? Like, Peyton, what was your very first CD you bought with your
My first CD was...
Yeah, or, tape, album.
Well, I think you're going back a couple of years, but my first CD was Pulp, Common People.
And it was,
my goodness. Mm. It was cool. It was a very enjoyable CD. I actually like Shatner's version as well, but but the first tape I bought, it was a compilation tape, and it was, I think it was called On Top, and it was like it came out in like probably 86, 87. Anyway, it was around the time they had the Columbia House, where you could, you know, order nine tapes for a penny or something like that.
Then you get nailed in the long run. Yeah.
But what was funny, there was some sort of mix-up, and they kept sending us a form for nine free tapes. So we just kept sending them back. I ended up getting like a ton of tapes, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anyway, I remember getting PM Don was one of them. The Batman soundtrack.
Which Batman soundtrack?
Oh, the Prince one from back in '89.
Oh yeah. Well, what was the song that was playing when Jack Nicholson was coming around on the float just before the Batwing came in?
Something about money.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Oh man, I just remember.
Cash? Was it called Cash?
Oh, Dan. I remember Jack Nicholson sticking his arms out with it.
Doing a chicken dance. He's coming around the corner, yeah. Anyway, yeah. So how about you, Joel? What was the first piece of music you bought? I could go back further to an album, but anyway.
I don't remember if it's the very, very first, but the one that I remember is Fresh Prince. And I believe the album was called Summertime.
Summer, summer, summertime.
But it's, that album, whatever that album was called. Was it called Summertime? I feel like it was. Anyway, there's that. And the other one was CNC Music Factory.
Oh, man.
And I don't remember which I bought first. I kind of hope it's the Fresh Prince because that has a little bit more cred than CNC Music Factory. Gonna make you dance till you bleed. Is that dope enough? Indeed.
Oh my god.
I know it's bad, right?
Oh,
yeah. No, those were my first tapes. So as you can see, listeners, or hear, we need a lot of help. So if you have some ideas in terms of what you might want us to listen to, something that you think is great, or if you'd like to share with us what your first music CD was, send us an email, send us a tweet on Twitter. And Mr. Merlin was curious about using a hashtag. So if you'd like to use the hashtag MusicTCC to help those, I guess, recommendations float to the top of the Twitterverse, then please do so. And we will be happy to talk about some new music, hopefully, on the next episode. And if you can send it to us like long before, we may even have a chance to listen to some stuff before we record next.
And maybe judge you on the choice of your music.
Well, I really want to know what people's first albums were. I think that's going to be a really cool thing to put in here, especially if it was people around our age, you know, mm-hmm. 'cause it'd be nice, a nice throwback to when we were teenagers. I can't remember. I think I had Criss Cross on CD. I don't think
that was make you jump, jump, man. The Mac Dad will make you jump, jump. I can't do it. I can't do my J-Rock.
Nice.
Oh, wiggity, 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 whack.
You've quoted them on this show before, Peyton. I know you have.
Yes, yeah. he has. I'm happy that you guys haven't, well, you know, I was going to say, I'm happy you haven't asked me what I first purchased with my own money.
Well, we haven't yet.
The first thing you purchased with your own money? Well, and where did the money come from? A paper route or?
No, well, see, you know, you get, I don't remember what I went out and bought for tapes or anything, if at all, because I always, my dad's buddy had all that stuff to make mixtapes. So, I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of older music from like the 70s and whatever my dad and his buddies were listening to in the 80s and stuff, right? And I'd just get a mixtape made. I'd say, oh, I really like that. And he'd be like, yeah, Chad, I'll make you that. So it was never an issue. But when I finally started working at Canadian Tire when I was 15, Tacoma Drive, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, the old Canadian Tire that's now a big self-storage place or whatever, I remember one of my first paychecks, I went out and bought a CD, and I don't know if Joel, if you were, we probably weren't hanging around too much by this point, but I went out and I bought a Low Down Dirty Shame, the soundtrack for the movie. Had Keenan Ivory Wayans in it, and it had, I think Jada Pinkett was in it too. And anyways, it was all that R&B kind of music. People like, who was in that? Let me just look it up. But I remember Tevin Campbell was huge at the time. R. Kelly was singing on it. Yeah. Stroke You Up there. Look at that. Stroke You Up by R. Kelly. Tell me that has nothing to do with sex, and I'd call you a liar. Aaliyah, written by R. Kelly. Like, all kinds of stuff. And I remember I went out and bought that, and then I was so disappointed because I think the next week was, like, Montel Jordan came out.
This is how we do it.
I do remember that, yeah.
This is how we do it. You know, you gotta get into it. And I remember that, and these were CDs, and I only had like four CDs to play on my General Electric stereo with CD player.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a huge purchase for me. Like, that's all the money I had for like a month. You know what? I see that. I remember, Joel, I remember playing basketball in your driveway, and some of the guys were like, hey, so cool. I was like, cool, man, it's payday. I'm going to buy a bike today. And they're like, hey, wow, cool. You've been saving money from your job to buy a bike. And I'm like, no, it's just payday. I'm just going to buy a bike with my money. And these guys, the ones that asked, are the ones with the paper routes. And they're like, well, it's time. I remember somebody was after me to get him a job right after that. So life was good at Canadian Tire.
Yeah, who was that, Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to give me a job there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I only started working at Canadian Tire when I was in university.
Yeah, for the news store.
The news store. I had a paper route up until my first job at Lawton's.
Oh, my goodness. That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was one of those guys with the paper route kind of going, damn it. I make like $50 every 2 weeks.
Yeah. My first job was moving furniture.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and my old man worked for a moving company. It was quite funny because he got me a job there one summer, and my mother came to pick me up after work, and she thought that he would have me just, you know, folding furniture pads or rolling up paper for packing things, and comes around the corner and I'm on, like, you know, the RSN of a refrigerator carrying it down the stairs with Dad, and she went in the car and just started crying. I'm like, oh my God, my boy's growing up. Right. You're making them work. And Dad's like, of course I'm making them work. He's getting the paycheck.
Nice.
I'm gonna hold his hand.
Oh man. Oh, well, like I said, let us know some more picks out there in terms of your first albums and your tastes of music that you'd like us to check out. I've actually noticed in the chat room, we've got a few bands that are being mentioned. Quiet Riot. Smashing Pumpkins by Lou, Busy Zombie Lord. He said that. And there was another one in there that I thought I saw too. That was good.
I'm seeing 8-track in there.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know if GIS Gamer bought that or whether she's just saying that was her first music.
No, Boba Fetish. My first music was 8-track. Yeah.
Like, and Star 544 was actually Matt, Mr. Foot, and he's gone now. But I think he was right on board with your Montel Jordan. He thought that was great.
Juice Newton.
Yeah, I. Whatever. Too funny. So I guess we can move on to our email section, which is exciting because we actually have email this week. So
email.
Jeez. We have email and a small heart attack victim this week. If you'd like to send a message to the show, you can send us an email at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Please keep the email concise if you can. We will edit down if we need to get it into the show. You can also send a voicemail, same email address, The Citadel Cafe. Please send an MP3 format and keep it clean, keep it short, and under 1 minute, if at all possible. I suppose with the explicit tag, we don't have to keep it that short, but I won't bleep you if you swear. So just keep in mind that we are putting this out on the internet. So if you get on the show and you're cussing a blue streak, your mom might hear you. And
she thinks we're cool too.
Yeah. our first email is from Rick P. And he writes, "Hey guys, love the show. I was wondering what your opinions are on Hollywood taking all of our 80s cartoons and turning them into horrible movies. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Rick."
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, thanks, man. Rick happens mm-hmm. to be a client. He is starting his own podcast, Fanboys Extra Large. I can't remember his podcasting partner's name, but they're commissioning me to do the artwork for their iTunes album. Yeah, so I'm stoked about that. And it's very similar to what we're doing here, but I think they have got a little bit more of a video game focus. So I'm looking forward to hearing that show after I finish the artwork for them.
Yeah, competition for the Gamers Inn?
I get news for you. The Gamers Inn is not the first gaming podcast.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I don't game very much.
No, me either, but I think they have a unique view.
I don't listen to any podcast, but that's one I'm going to start listening to someday.
Gamers Inn? Yeah, no, it's a good show. It's a hoot, as they say. Actually, there was one episode where Jocelyn was talking to herself because Ryan had to go like get a drink of water or something, and he just let the thing record. So she was sitting there talking to herself, and it's the funniest way to intro a show that I have heard in a really long time.
Nice. You know, if they say people that talk to themselves have money.
What? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, oh, no, they got stepped on by the ad. We got stepped on by the stupid ad on Ustream.
Oh, no.
Stupid Ustream.
Stupid Ustream.
Yeah. Oh, well. All that goodwill gone.
We should make shout-outs to the Gamers Inn guys, just so you know.
Yeah, we're going to test out Justin TV, I think, between now and next week to see whether that might be a better home for the live stream. For all of the live streaming I'm doing, not just the Citadel Cafe. But what is your opinion of the 80s murdering that is happening in Hollywood?
Dead.
I think it goes back to what Chad said a few weeks ago about how nostalgia and the cycle of recycling our youth is getting more and more and more condensed. So because, you know, the kids are like, "Hey, remember, you know, MP3 players from 4 years ago? Oh, man, I was back in the day," you know? Because kids are thinking like that you know, they're having to go back further and further to strip mine our popular culture and our youth, right? So, you know, like they're making a Battleship game, for God's sakes. I mean, a Battleship movie based on the old Battleship game. And,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of ridiculous. Adam Sandler, I guess, is going to be producing and starring in the new Candyland game. They were talking about that today online. And
whose idea was it to make board games into movies?
I don't know. I'm really looking forward to the Paper, Rock, Scissor movie when it comes out. I think it's going to be a trilogy. And you know,
Paper, Rock, Scissor, Spock? No.
Yeah. Rock, Lizard, Paper, Spock. Scissor, Lizard, Spock. Lizard,
Spock. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's getting kind of silly, but I don't know. Some, you know, there's no real new ideas anyways, but it's just dress them up a little bit. Disappointing in some regards.
Yeah, know? And it's not like it's a new idea. I mean, do you guys remember Masters of the Universe?
Yes.
Yeah, did you see?
Courtney Cox and Dolph Lundgren.
Yes. Courtney Cox and Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager.
That's right, yeah. That's right, he's in that. I mean, actually, here's a really good one. Oscar Award nominee Frank Langella was Skeletor in that movie.
No, he wasn't.
Look it up, dude. He totally was. I mean, you can't tell, obviously, and he was probably all of like 30, maybe closer to 40. But he is Skeletor in that movie. I was looking up some other thing that he was in. He was Perry White in one of the recent Superman renditions.
Oh, okay.
And Superman Returns. He was Perry White. And I looked up the IMDb for that particular movie, and I saw Masters of the Universe. Who the hell was he? Thinking like news reporter, someone's dad, like, you know, typecasting him. It's like, nope, he was Skeletor. Wow. And really, that is the one thing about the Masters of the Universe that was done well was the way that they handled Skeletor in terms of the makeup and stuff. Like,
yeah,
it was
that's where the budget
freaking
went.
Freaking creepy.
Yeah. Yep.
Really, really creepy. And I'm not going to lie. I would go see a remade He-Man if it was done well. And probably Thundercats, too.
Thundercats! Well,
there's a new Thundercats cartoon, which is getting a lot of good attention.
It's okay. People lose me the moment that they put 3D in a cartoon when it doesn't need to be. And I know that there's more to a cartoon than just bad 3D, but the whole idea is that the lizard people are coming after the Thundercats, and they attack with all these mechs. And Peyton, like, if they could be animated any stiffer, like, it's ridiculous. Like, you know the kind of stuff they can do with 3D. You're animating a robot, so it's got hinges. You don't have to worry about, like, rigging it too complexly. You can just make it cool. You know, like, they could do AT-ATs and AT-STs in the 70s, you know, or in 80s when they made Star Wars, but they can't make a mech walk in 2011? Like, anyway, it drove me crazy. And just, I tuned out almost immediately. Like, this isn't going to be worth it. And it's unfortunately... It's very anime. It's not my thing.
Yeah, they were talking about doing a just thinking along the same anime sort of lines. There was once in a while you hear about how Hollywood wants to redo Akira as a live action feature, and that's just a bad idea because they were trying to set it in New York.
Oh, of course,
just totally changing the premise of it and everything, and it,
like Godzilla.
That movie is just it's good the way it is. Just leave it be. Just leave
Peyton,
it be.
Peyton, did you like it? Did you like Akira?
I really did enjoy Akira.
Me too.
Again, when I saw it, it was actually the second anime I ever viewed. I think the first one was Valley of the Wind, and I saw that one back in like 87 or something. But this one, it was just great, especially like the scene when the guy's running down the street. And he's being chased by the two dogs, and then one of the dogs is in midair, and he shoots the dog, and the way it falls and hits the car and breaks, and it's just brilliant. Like there's so much detail, and the timing of that is great. You know, they do full animation when you need to, and other things, you know, if they can pull back a little bit, they do, and it's just an excellent film, you know. And the concept is a pretty high concept to put out there for a film that, you know, to try to redo for an American audience that knows nothing about it, and then try to say, okay, here it is. And good luck, because it's based off like a huge manga, right? So anyway, I'm surprised they actually were able to convert it into that. But I'd be happy to see a Gummies Bear movie, but you know, we'll see what happens. Yes,
or DuckTales.
DuckTales.
That would be very good. Yep.
Are you talking like live action reimaginings or animated features?
You know what, Gummy Bears? Yeah, do like Smurfs. You know, just totally ruin our childhood, right?
I was going to say, I wanted to bring that one up. I loved the Smurfs as a kid, but I didn't see the new movie, but I heard they really destroyed it.
Yeah. And you've got something in the show notes here, Chad. Silverhawks?
Yes. I had the toy. I had this toy, and it was one guy, and it was probably a little bit bigger than a G.I. Joe, and you hit the little button on his back, and his arms came out, and these little wings came underneath his arms, and they flew around in space in these spaceships that they like. You know how Batman goes down in the new Batmobile, and he goes into like the attack assault mode?
Yeah,
drives down. They sort of fly spaceships like that, and against all these other stuff. I actually posted a link, filmdirectors.co, 10 top 10 80s cartoons that this guy put together. And there's a preview. All the intros of like some of the best cartoons are in there, and you can watch it, and you'll be like, wow. And they could make a great parody movie of that because it is really it's awkward to watch it now.
I had these toys. I totally had this stuff.
Do you remember now?
Yes, I do remember it now. It was all the same like 80s machine that was pumping out Brave Star and Thundercats Silverhawks. Yeah. And there was another show too where they had like they had stuff attached to them where you could have the
Centurions. Man, a machine.
Maybe that's what it was.
There was Ace who would fly, and then it was the guy underwater, and it was a guy on land, and there was a cyborg who was the bad guy, and he had a henchman who had like, he was like half of.
Yeah, I do remember
pretty,
that.
They're pretty cool tools.
Wow.
Right toys.
Well, how was Inspector Gadget, guys? Did you see that?
I didn't know. I haven't seen the Smurfs either. I probably won't see the Smurfs.
No.
I feel like I've seen part of the new Chipmunks movies. but
David Cross was in them, and apparently he said that working on the last one was the absolute worst experience of his entire professional career.
Who said that?
David Cross, the comedian.
Oh, jeez.
Apparently at one point, like, they wanted him to go on the cruise and dress up in this suit. I guess part of it, you know, because it's, you know, chipwrecked or whatever they're calling it. They're on a cruise ship, and he's supposed to be on the cruise ship dressed up in a mascot costume. And David Cross is like, you can't see my face. I don't need to be on the cruise ship to do the filming for this piece, right? That's going to stand in it. And the producer's like, no, we want you there in the costume. And he was obligated to go. So there he is standing on deck, sweating to death inside this big whatever costume. You know, you can't even see who it is. Anyway, yeah. It's like, it's ridiculous. I don't need to be here.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, I like the way that the Transformers movies came out. I'm not saying that they're, you know, Shakespearean Oscar-winning.
Michael Bay.
Yeah, I mean, he has a little bit of Michael Bay on everything that he does, but I did think that they were cool. I mean, I watched them. I remember watching it with my sister for the first time. I think we rented it, or I had owned it, and I brought it over to her place to watch. And she used to watch Transformers with me when I was a kid because, I mean, that's...
You were the big brother and you dominated.
Well, no. I mean, I used to watch... We used to share and we'd have to watch, like, Gem and the Holograms or whatever. But, I mean, Transformers... She-Ra? Yeah, She-Ra. Well, see, but She-Ra and He-Man were on, like, back-to-back. So, I mean, you each got a show.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, I remember when the first transformation happens with Optimus Prime in the alley in the first Transformers movie that just came out a few years ago. And Andrea was just... She gasped when it started to happen.
Nice.
You know, I mean, they did some things justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know...
Getting the voice was good.
Yeah, Peter Cullen was great. I really wish they had got the original guy to do Megatron. Apparently, he does it in the video games. They got the original actor that played Megatron to do them in the video games. But Hugo Weaving, I just feel like he's in just so much pop culture. Like, it's Mr. Anderson, what is he called? Agent something?
Agent Smith.
Agent Smith. So Agent Smith and Elrond.
And Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
Yes, that was on TV the other day, and I went, what the hell is this? That's Hugo Weaving. And that's
Wesley Snipes.
Guy Pearce. No, that was a remaker. That was another one,
John. Yeah, that's Tuan Fu. Thanks for everything, Julie Newmar. Oh, why do I know this?
I don't know.
Dude, you're digging. Don't dig that deep. You're digging your grave.
Well, they're just movies.
Yeah.
Part of your rotating playlist.
Yeah. Because Terrence Stamp, I think, was in the original.
Yes, he was. Yeah, that's who else it was in there, too.
Yeah. Have you ever seen The Limey?
No.
Great, great film. It might be hard to find, but I think it's on Netflix. He's a British ex-con whose daughter goes to California, and she ends up passing away. So he gets out of prison and comes over looking for what happened. And he's like, you know, his daughter Jenny, like, she wasn't a drunk or anything, and apparently she died in a car crash drinking and driving. And he didn't believe it, so he's looking for the person that was responsible.
Okay.
And it's a nice little revenge flick.
Cool.
But, at one point, like, a guy challenges him, and he just drops him.
Oh, nice.
Funny, right? But they do some really nice editing in that film, and stylistically, it's a nice film to watch visually, and they actually take a lot of shots from a film he was in about 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it intercut that in as, like, the backstory for him. Now, I'm not quite sure if there's anything to do with the characters on that, but it really, really works quite well. So, yeah, it's worth checking it on Netflix if you can, you know, if you got the time. It's the Limey. It's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, we have one more email this week from Gregory C., and this comes all the way across the pond from France. And he actually commented on Google Plus, and I think there might be a bit of a language barrier, so forgive me if I read this as best I can. Episode 1 of Being Human is pretty cool, but now I want to know more stuff like how did they meet each other? Why vampire can do Jedi mind trick? He did not do it. Go to your car. Okay. He did not do it. I will go to my car. He goes on to talk about things about the werewolf, a little bit more about the ghost, etc., and how the vampire plays a little bit too much like Edward from Twilight.
Ooh.
I'm going to take him to task on this because I actually like, I really like the vampire in Being Human. So since I guess I'm the only one that's been watching the UK version, which I think, which I think is what Gregory is watching as well. Cause I think he started watching at the same time that I was watching and tweeting about it. And, he's right. Some of the things about the vampire stuff is really unclear. Not traditionally speaking, the vampires can walk around in the daytime.
Yeah.
Like they can walk out in the sun and it's fine. I mean, they're sensitive to sunlight, but they don't burn up into a pile of smoke. Stakes can kill them. They eat food and blood. They treat blood more like a habit, an addiction, like a drinking problem, for anybody that wants to quit than they do, like it's the only thing they ever want to eat. And I don't remember the mind control thing. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm not remembering, but I don't remember them being able to, as they call it in True Blood, glimmer people. They do stay true to form with mirrors. You can't see their reflection. They can't be captured on film, digitally, or in mirrors. And that's about it. Like everything else seems to be about the same. You know, they're strong. They live forever. You know, they do the whole black eyeball thing and fangs. But it is kind of hard to wrap your mind around it because it does break some of the norms, I guess, of most vampire universe stuff.
Although I think some of the mind control or the, you know, persuasion thing is something that's been in other films or other versions. You know, the Anne Rice takes care of that as well. And I think so does Bram Stoker.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I just, yeah. I don't know where he's getting it from this. If I feel like he thinks it's happening or
yeah, because I know in the North American version there is an incident between the vampire and a human, and the human recognizes the vampire as like the one who's gone cold turkey, as being the one who I think killed his wife or something, okay. And he's approaching him, so he goes in to try to wipe the guy's mind, and it's a hard thing to do, and apparently he doesn't do very well, and things just go bad. So, like, you know, it's, I guess it depends on their age and, you know, the older they get, the stronger they get. So, yeah. You know, if you're too young, don't be at it.
Yeah. But. And that's one of the things that I really like about the show is that the ghost, especially, she develops as the series goes on because as she gets older as a ghost and more experienced, she develops more abilities. And I'm sure that there's going to be more coming from the werewolf and coming from the vampires, things go on. But I really. I'm going to have to disagree with you, Gregory. I really don't think he's anything like Edward from Twilight. He's,
yeah.
Have you seen Edward from Twilight? Have you actually watched Twilight?
I saw the first movie. I had to do it for research for Toys R Us.
Wow. But you got paid for it. You got paid for it.
I did. Okay. I did. Oh, that was billable, dude. It's 2 paid hours of my life I will never, ever get back. I watched with my friend Erin because she's really into this stuff. And all the questions that I had, she was able to answer. I mean, and I had to bite my tongue, you know. So I'd be like, why is this happening? And she would explain. And then in my head, I went, oh, that's stupid. But I'd be you're like,
why is the acting so bad? George Lucas didn't direct this.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was a terrible movie.
Yeah. I think it was New Moon or whatever it was on TV the other day, and flicking the channels with my wife, and she stopped on it because I guess my neighbor's daughter wanted to go with a bunch of friends, so her mother went with her, so we went with them. I'm like, it's 2 hours, you're not going to get back. So anyway, she went, came back, and all she said was sparkly abs. And whenever they hit the sunlight, they get all sparkly abs. So we're watching a part of it here, and I am howling laughing. It is so bad. Oh, my God. It was like, yeah, I expected one of Wayne's brothers to show up, you know, with a, I don't know, some sort of sex toy throwing it at someone as a stake or something, because it was just bizarre, right? It was very, like, is this not a parody of an actual movie? This is an actual movie. Okay. But, you know, they make a lot of they made a lot of money with that film, so.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I guess the executives are looking at how they're going to make, you know, follow-ups or prequels or whatever after this is all wrapped up, because it is such a cash cow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's just it. And that's setting the standard for vampires. Like, you know, like they do stuff like that, and that's where people come out. Well, does he do it like the guy in Twilight? Why is he doing it? When, you know, what did we grow up with? Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Bela Lugosi. Yeah. Christopher Lee.
How old are you?
But the Lost Boys.
Lost Boys, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's
a Fright Night. What's it about?
Fright Night.
The one with Bill Paxton. Before Dawn? No. What is the one Bill Paxton was in?
Dawn Before Dusk?
Dusk Before Dawn.
No, that movie was awesome because my father didn't know that it was a vampire movie. He thought it was just a bank heist movie. And then he's like, what the hell? Like, really
vampire
show.
Oh,
really funny, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we can call that a wrap on email. Once again, the email for the show is thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Love hearing from our listeners. So by all means, send us a note. And that brings us to the Internet Minute, where we can talk about a few things that we found online. My stuff is actually pretty short, so I'm going to jump in first. I was taking a look at some of the things that are being reviewed at Macworld last week. I think it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday was with Macworld Expo. And two of the things that caught my eye were the iPro lens and the Olo clip. And they're basically just lens attachments for your iPhone. The iPro lens is a whole system. It's a case as well as a handle. Inside the handle are three different lenses. One is a wide angle, one is a fisheye, and one is a 2x zoom. And they retail for $200, and I thought it was a pretty neat clip for the iPhone. The other one is the Olo clip, which is a cheaper version. It's only $69.99. And it clips directly onto the phone. So I think you probably have to take your case off of the phone to get this thing on there. But it does the same thing where there's like a lens inside of a lens. There's a macro lens, a fisheye lens, and I think a wide angle lens as well. So the difference there is that the macro is different than the 2x zoom. The iPro lens, it's a little bit more for pro photographers that want to use their iPhones for stuff, whereas the Olo clip is just something, it's really tiny. It's about the size of, smaller than a golf ball, you know, so, and flatter. So it would fit in a pocket really easily. And it would come out to hook onto the iPhone whenever you needed. And I watched a guy do it and it's really fast. Like you can put it on your iPhone at the same time that the camera app is loading. It really doesn't take any time. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Did you notice anything about zooming? Does it actually improve the zoom feature of the iPhone? Because they use digital zoom. And you know what? That is one way to really destroy a photo.
Well, that's the thing. The digital zoom on the photo is going to cause noise. It's going to cause pixelation and stuff in your photos. If you're going to be taking something artsy and you're going to put a filter on it later, then you can kind of get away with that sometimes. In order to do what's called optical zooming, which is physical with the lens, you can't do it on the iPhone. The iPhone lens inside the phone is fixed. That's what these clips are for.
Now I understand.
You put this clip on and it's got a wide angle. So then you don't have to stand as close to something. And then you unscrew the wide angle and underneath the wide angle is the fisheye. And then if you take the clip off and then flip it around, the other side is the 2x zoom, or however they have it all lined up.
Nice.
On the iPro lens, it's actually all encased within the handle. So if you think about it like those stacking dolls that you see in movies where there's like a doll inside of a doll inside of a doll.
Yep, the Russian dolls.
Russian dolls. Sorry, thank you. Anyway, so the handle is like that. So you unscrew one part of the handle, and you can take your lens off and put it on the case. And then you screw the handle back together so you can still have a handle for the phone, as well as the lens is actually sticking physically on the outside of the iPhone.
Oh, okay, that's what that was.
Yeah,
okay.
And then when you go back and do, if you want a different lens, you then have to, you know, unscrew the handle, get the other lens, replace the lens that's on the camera back into the handle. So the iPro is a little bit more of a, not so much a studio feature, but it's something that you want to have prepared. Like you're going to be using this particular lens for the next little bit, so you have that out. Whereas the Olo clip is something that you can really just kind of flip around at will. So like you're at the beach and you want a wide angle, you flip it over, you take the shot. It's like, oh, I kind of want the macro lens for this, you know, picture of a bug or something like that. And you flip that over and you take the picture. So it's a little bit more accessible. $70 is still a little bit cheap for me or expensive for me, but it's something that I would look at if I had a little bit more disposable income. And the other thing that I had going on that caught my attention just this afternoon was a post by Brian Brushwood on Google+. And it is about the mini quad drone. And they're, if you're familiar at all with these little drones, they're quadro helicopters. And these things are only about the size of a small dessert plate, kind of a saucer, like a teacup and saucer. And they fly in formation. They avoid obstacles. They do all these kind of crazy things. And they're so tiny. And it's not so much the ability of what they're doing. It's the noise of 10 or 12 of them in the room at the same time that kind of makes you kind of go, uh-oh.
When they were making the figure eight in that video, that was awesome.
Oh, I know. Yeah, so they fly in formation. They fly in formation through obstacles, then reassign to formation. At the end of the video, they put them into a smiley face formation. Like, it's really, really cool. You have to check this out. It's called the Mini Quadrone. And it was, there's not only is there the YouTube video on Brian Brushwood's Google Plus feed, but you can also see the comments and the conversation that happens after it. And I think, like you said here, Chad, they kind of remind me of the Protoss carriers.
Yeah.
From Starcrossed. StarCraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this zing, 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 they just coming from all angles, coordinated attacks coming in and out.
Yeah,
those are awesome. And think of the military applications for something like that.
Oh my god,
on bigger stuff.
Yeah, I mean for me the application is like, how much could you piss off the neighbor's cat?
just a little laser finder, right? Zing, mark target acquired. Zzz, and then the Valkyrie song, what's the name of the song?
Oh, March of Valkyries.
And then the cat's ears perk, like, hey, there's music. And there's the old woman across the street. Where's that music coming from? And then all of a sudden, and they come in on the cat. if I was 10 years old again.
Oh, I know. Well, the cool thing is that you have to be an adult and have a job to afford these toys. So,
yeah.
You still have access. Peyton, what about you? What are your picks this week?
Well, there was the Miss Piggy video regarding the Fox stuff, but also the link that you sent me a few days ago regarding the Kickstarter campaign.
You're gonna go there on me.
Well, I think there's actually some really good stuff that can be gleaned from this.
Yeah.
And, anyway, it's very interesting because there's a guy who has a webcomic, and it's been on the go for, I guess it's 2005, and
better part of 7 years, yeah.
Yeah, better part of 7 years. It's called The Order of the Stick. Anyway, he currently is sitting at 1,119 people liking it on Facebook on his Kickstarter campaign. And when I saw it yesterday, it was like 900 and something. So his Kickstarter campaign currently has broken into the top 10 all-time Kickstarter moneymakers. He wanted to have $57,000 in order to do some printing of his comics, and as of today, at this moment, he has $367,000 raised.
What's he doing?
It's a Stickman comic.
It's a Stickman comic, but it's, as Joel said, it's gamer related. So, you know, you have a very loyal following of people who are into that sort of thing.
Okay.
And who may have disposable income to buy into it. But one of the things that he's done that really, I think, has helped garner a lot of income from this is very base level of the pledge of $10 gets you a fridge magnet of the comic, but also it gets you a free, it gets you a digital PDF of the original story, which is pretty neat because everybody who buys into it gets this PDF. Now, normally, people probably wouldn't buy the PDF for $10. They might maybe spend 99 cents, $2, maybe, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But to do it in this format, where they're actually helping to get this thing produced, you know, I guess these people are feeling they're actually contributing to it, a little more involved with it, and they'll throw $10 onto it. So he's got 1,300 people who are backing that first level of the tier, and as he's reached higher and higher levels here, he's added more tiers to it, right? But I think it's an interesting concept for how he's doing it.
Yeah, I haven't gone through and read all of the tiers, but there are.
There
are more than you would expect. Like it goes to 14, 25, 26, 29, 35, 37, 38. Like you can see where I'm going. He only increments are up each time by sometimes even just a dollar.
Yeah.
And it just changes what people are getting. And I understand that he's, you know, funding his book and he's reprinting old books that are no longer in print that people want and all that kind of stuff. But for me, what is mind-blowing. It kind of puts it in perspective. Like, everybody was talking the other day about how much money Apple has made, and I mean, you're talking about the billions. Facebook is filed, as of today, they filed for their IPO, so they're going to be a publicly traded company come May.
Yeah.
I mean, what their stock is going to be and how much their company is going to be worth. and it is astronomical, the amount of money. But to put this, you know, Kickstarter in perspective, something Jocelyn said last night, because I talked to you yesterday, Peyton, in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before, I had said...
In 2 days, he's raised $112,000.
Yeah, so. well, in the span of you and I talking around noon yesterday, and me talking with Jocelyn on the phone last night, he raised more money than she and I make in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You know, like, and I mean, the creator in me and the hard worker in me kind of is a little frustrated with stuff like this. I mean, on one part, you know, all the power to him. He is doing a Stickman comic in terms of a budget, in terms of what can you draw fastest, you know, to produce more stuff. Who's the smart one? Dude that's taking 8 hours to draw one comic strip every week. That would be me, you know. But on the other hand, it's really frustrating to think that, you know, this kind of stuff is raising that kind of money. And you're kind of like, well, where, you know, like, I don't expect anything to be easy. I understand I have to work for what I do and how I want to achieve my goals. But it's just like, what the hell do I have to do to raise even enough to print one book, let alone, you know, several thousand books? It's a little... It's a little frustrating. And I do want to dig into this more. I have to do some research because I'm on Comics Coast to Coast tomorrow night, and I'm sure that we're going to be talking about this.
Yeah. Well, because it is starting to garner some press now that it has gotten so big.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of wonder, like, how is he going to make good on all this? Like, I understand, Jocelyn pointed out last night that he has enough money to hire people to help him. Like, it's...
Oh, definitely. And as you said, you know, some of the newer levels that he's adding in are things that haven't been started yet, but he's said to people, like, you know, you'll be getting your stuff, but it might be the summer before you get it, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's even one pledge at $5,000.
Yeah, but that one pledge, though, is, you get your own D&D character based on your descriptions within reason and gets a walk-in cameo, right? So, you put it out there, someone would be interested in that, right?
He's pimping himself out is really all it sounds like he's doing, though.
Yeah, but I think that, it also comes down to that the notion of 1,000 fans. If you have 1,000 true fans who will purchase whatever it is you produce, you can be completely self-sufficient. Because like I cannot remember the guy's name. I'll see if I can find it and then put it in the show notes later. But he does a lot of pinups as well as very illustrator style, like vector line pinup style drawings as well.
Are you talking about Joseph Campbell?
Not Joseph Campbell, no. But he does a quarterly sketchbook that he sells for $20. And then he also does other things for your prints and all that sort of stuff, right? And he's the one where I first heard about this was through him. And he has, you know, he prints 1,000 of these books out 4 times a year and sells out every year. So they're right there, you know, he's making, you know, some pretty good scratch, right? On top of his regular commission work or, you know, other commercial work that he would do. Yeah. So.
And the math on that for people that are wondering is that usually it's about 1% of your readership will purchase something that you're doing. So, you know, he has to have, you know, 100,000 or more. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So if he has 1,000 people who will buy, you know, a book here or a book there or whatever. So, you know, and you know, they don't necessarily have to buy as soon as it comes out. Right. But, you know, he'll go to a comic book con and he'll have, you know, any back issues there. And if he's, you know, it's only 1,000 of them and he signs them on the spot and does a little drawing and away you go. Right. So, you know, this guy, he has been doing this comic, you know, since 2005. And, you know, from that, you know, I'm assuming he's been posting or doing his thing on a fairly consistent, regular basis. And, you know, his fans have been, you know, growing with him. So you got your guys who probably have, again, come back to the sense of nostalgia, right? They've been, you know, like, oh, yeah, I remember this when I was in college and it's all well and good. Oh, he's doing this stuff. Now I'm making some money. So now I'm going to invest in this, you know, as like you said, Joe, the idea of the free economy, you know, you put this out there, you do it for free. And when it comes time for you to put together a collection, people are like, okay, well, now I'll buy something. So maybe this is the moment that people are like, oh, wow, I forgot about this. Here we go, right?
And I mean, the one thing that I don't want to sound like I'm being too negative Nancy on this, but on a positive note, this is somebody that would have never been allowed to get into mainstream papers. Like it just wouldn't have been printed. Like it just they would the editors would have said, no one wants to read that.
Yeah.
But because it's the internet, because you know companies like Kickstarter and stuff exist, it allows the do-it-yourselfer at home to earn a living doing the things that he loves. I mean, and this $300,000 looks like a massive, you know, ton of money, and it's certainly not his income. Like all of that is not profit. Like he has to then print books and
Yeah, in the update session on his page there, he does have a graph indicating what the, all the money is earmarked for.
Yes.
So it you know, again, he's
Chad, what's the...
Yeah, sorry.
Just to come in after all that.
Yeah.
Let's lighten the mood. Did you guys see my this first post here at www.buystarwarscostumes.com?
I did, and I want to know what it smells like on the inside.
That's from stepping on you three times last week. You stole my thunder on this one.
At that price point, that's actually pretty cool.
The way the guys... If you just look at it, it looks like he's got the Tauntaun in front of him, and that's what it looks like. That's how he knows what it smells like inside.
Too far.
That's why we have the explicit reading. There's also down below an inflatable Tauntaun kids costume, but that kid's like, woohoo!
I want the Wampa floor rug. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It's a neat website. I just went looking to see, I was the other day seeing how much that would it cost to get a Stormtrooper suit. And now these guys are selling one for around $1,000, I think. But with all the plastic stuff, everything full on helmet, everything like that. And But I piqued my interest was the Imperial Guard, the red suit.
Mm-hmm.
That's like $400 with the mask and stuff. That's not too bad too. But you know, I need a good Halloween party to go to dress like that, so I'm not gonna go overboard at this time.
Just to interject about Halloween costumes. Did you guys ever see a couple of years ago on I think it was like Coppa's Robot, just a regular blog there, they had a link to a Craigslist article that a guy wanted to get an amputee to go as C-3PO on his back and him to go as Chewbacca. It was brilliant because I guess this guy who has his Chewbacca costume and he's a very large man and he said, you know, I want to be able to carry someone around, but I want to have someone in a C-3PO costume in order to be able to fit it and make it do it justice. I want you to be a double amputee, right? And this is what he was asking for. I think we'll be a big hit at parties and all this stuff. Was like, super creepy, right? Anyway, sorry. Oh, wow. Go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
My second thing is it's another CBC News article. I tend to gravitate towards those last couple of weeks, but this guy doing his thing goes out and buys one of those new Chevy Volts electric car, and you know, plug it in every night. And the people that live in the condo with him are upset because their energy bill is going up because in condos, I guess you share the power bill.
Okay.
And so they want him to put in his own a separate meter for him for his car. And he's got to foot the bill and it's something like $3,000 because he's got to pay the hydro guys to come in and set up the meter. And he's got to pay for it all of his own pocket. And this guy doing his thing for the environment.
Yeah.
And this is what they do. So I went up and looked and I said, you know, what does it cost to charge this thing? And on the Chevy website, it says based on national average of 12 cents per kilowatt hour and at 12.9 kilowatt hours to create a full charge, it costs you around $1.55 to charge the car on a full charge. And it says you don't have to charge it every night because I guess it's a hybrid, but it's like a really good hybrid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, Joel, do you remember when you got your flat screen TV, how much your power bill went up?
Yes.
It was like $20 or something. Like it was
between $5 and $10 a month.
Sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, picture that. So if the guy had got a flat screen, no one would have said a word because they wouldn't have seen it, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. But because they can see the car outside and it's like, you know, it's like everybody had repressed childhood sibling rivalries. He got that. Why don't I get that? You know, here's a guy taking the lead, going out and finally moving forward, moving past all that stuff, and he's getting nailed for it. What a bunch of douches.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I feel the same way. Did you watch the video on the site?
On the Volt site?
Yeah.
Or, oh, no, on the CBC.
On the CBC news site, oh, yeah. I watched that just before the show, and he's being interviewed, and he's like, this isn't costing that much, and I've told the condo association that I will pay for the extra electricity. So he's willing to pay for the extra money on the building.
Yeah.
Which is more than he's using. So he's paying for someone who's watching TV all night long. He's paying for someone who's, you know, using their a stove and oven to, you know, bake cookies for the entire Girl Scout, you know, troop. And it's still probably cheaper for him to do that than it is to gas his car. And they still said no.
Condo corporations can be very, very strange. It's
brutal.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brutal.
Well, on a lighter note, I ordered this tonight. And did you guys click on the link down the bottom there?
No, because you put it in just like now.
Now. Yeah. Okay. I just realized I forgot to put that in. It's a Leatherman, if anybody doesn't know. It's a Gerber. Okay. It's a multi-tool. And this do you see that? I ordered that tonight, man.
That's awesome.
So excited to get this. It's got a few other things that I can use for other things I do. But it's got so many awesome little features on it compared to my old Gerber and Leatherman. Like, it's got a strap cutter. Like, you know, like you could take to a seatbelt or to cut something off. It's got the clip built into it. It's got all the great things. It's the hammer on the heel. You can do other things. I'm so excited to use this.
If anyone doesn't know, a Leatherman is actually a multi-tool. It's like it's almost like a Swiss Army knife, but with a set of pliers as the base point of it. So anyway.
We'll post it in the show notes. And right away, one of the first things it says on the Leatherman site is, "Hey, Batman, check this out." And that's exactly it, man. If Batman needed a multi-tool, it would be this.
Yeah, it doesn't have a Gatling gun attached to it. I mean, a grappling gun, but it's pretty sweet.
I got it on Amazon, actually, for $30 less than what it's been retailing everywhere else. So I'm excited to get this one. Really excited.
Well, you said it was only $30.
No, $130.
Oh, $130. I was like, a little Skype glitch there. I was like, what? Okay.
You could also try to find someone who would do a price comparison with Amazon as well. So you could get an extra 10% off some places, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Very cool. Well, before we get out of here, we do have an iTunes review that we'd like to get to. And if you're looking at a way to help support the show, one of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners is via the reviews in the iTunes store. If you like the show, give us a rating, leave us a review, and we might share your thoughts on the next episode, just like this one. And this is from R. Piven, happens to be the same gentleman who emailed us earlier in the show. And he just went on to say that, "I love this show. It makes you feel like you are sitting around with a group of friends talking about what you love. Keep up the great work, guys." So thanks very much. We really appreciate the kind review. Also, incidentally, it was a 5-star review.
Five stars.
That's one more than four, but one less than six.
Joel.
Yes.
Moist.
Thanks for coming out, everybody. This has been the Citadel Cafe. That wraps up this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, we mentioned before, you can reach us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also find our blog, Twitter, and other social media access at The Citadel Cafe. It's pretty simple. It's all one word. You can find us just by searching. So tweet us. Look us up on Google+. Find us at The Citadel Cafe, and we shall be quite happy to hear from you. Our show notes are written by Jocelyn Moffat of the Gamers Inn podcast. You can find out more about that podcast at gamersinpodcast.com. And last but not least, I have been Joel Duggan, and you can find my comic and pretty much all that I'm up to over at starcrossedonline.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Google+ with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
www.cardboardtreehouse.com, as well as @@thing at Peyton Francis. Yeah. All right.
That's a long Twitter handle, dude.
Yeah. Only one at, not 20 ats. At Peyton Francis. At.
And Chad, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Chad Merlin. And I'd just like to say one more thing before we go. This being episode 6, gentlemen, we've just had our Jedi.
So we have.
Is it George Lucas?
Jesus.
Well, I saw the end of that one, you know. So. And people laughed at the theater then, too.
Jeez, yeah.
Really George real. Lucas, eat your heart out, buddy, because we're going to have an episode 7.
Nice. Oh, man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Fast and easy, baby.
Mm-hmm.
No, this way! We have to end the show now!